Hello, everybody, and welcome to Honey Badger Radio. My name is Brian Martinez, and I am your host here on today's Fireside Chat. I am joined by Dr. Elizabeth Bates. Dr. Elizabeth Bates is a lecturer in psychology and domestic violence. She's also a domestic violence researcher specializing in male victims of female domestic abusers. She's challenged the male control paradigm informing current interventions into domestic violence and is a trustee of Mankind UK, a helpline for male victims of domestic violence. Hello, Dr. Bates. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. Did I get all that right? Or...
Yeah, no, that was a very good introduction. Thank you. Well,
thank you. Thank you. All right. So, Dr. Bates, I found you on Twitter, recommended to me by one of our listeners. And so I looked into what you did and I thought I have to get her on the show. So I'm really happy that you responded so quickly and you took an interest in coming on. Guys, if you are watching, please consider that if there are problems with the stream, you can watch us also on Twitch or on the Facebook page. We do have the streams occurring in multiple places, so just go to wherever it's best. Also, be sure to hit that like button because it does a lot for our analytics and lets people know that we are streaming, which invites more people to watch the stream if we get enough. And lastly, if you're not already subscribed to our channel, and feel free to share these conversations because I think they are vitally important. Okay, so Dr. Bates, how did you come to study this male side of domestic violence victims, specifically men as victims of female aggressors?
Well, when I started doing my degree quite a few years ago now, I'd had a lecture about women's violence and specifically women's violence in domestic relationships. And I'd just never at that point considered, as I think a lot of people haven't, that women could be violent in relationships and violent towards men in that way. And so it sort of sparked an interest really that started my research journey through sort of my dissertation and then on into my PhD. Where I was really exploring the predictors and the different things that feed into domestic violence and people's partner violence. I looked specifically within my PhD research at men's and women's partner violence. I looked at the personality predictors of it. I also looked at the overlaps that occur with controlling behaviour and with aggression to same-sex others not in an intimate relationship. I sort of found that there were men and women were reporting very similar levels of perpetration of domestic violence in relationships. Mm-hmm. So they were reporting mm-hmm. perpetrating violence at fairly similar rates. So I really wanted to kind of unpick, once I got my PhD, I sort of wanted to unpick further that idea actually that there were male victims that were not reporting it and not getting help and support because it was an issue that we just still don't talk about as much as we do other types of domestic violence. So it led me down a path of exploring men's experiences and really, I suppose, finding that actually they are really quite significant, despite some of the criticisms of certain types of research being that men don't really feel the impact of it and that it's not as serious an issue for men as it is for women. In contrast, I found that it's just the same. There are very similar levels of abuse and psychological abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse that's experienced. Yeah. But it's men experience other barriers, I think, in coming forward and other specific sort of types of impact of it that's kind of wrapped up in this idea of masculinity and what makes men in this day and age. So it kind of led me down this path of exploring this in more detail.
What in your experience have you found in terms of the reasons why men don't, report being victims of domestic violence, according to your research?
Well, I've tapped into that a little bit with a study that I did last year, and I'm actually currently collecting data at the moment. I'm looking for men who feel comfortable completing an online questionnaire at the moment to tell me a little bit more about that. But what I found within the first study that I did, in amongst the stories men were telling me about how severe the abuse was and how bad the control and the manipulation was, a lot of them talked about different reasons that they'd never told anybody. So, for example, some people told me that it was the first time they'd ever told anybody when they were writing it down to me. I think that part of that was because my questionnaire is anonymous. I've no idea and no way of knowing who's completed it. It was really important to me to do that, to try and overcome some of these barriers. I think that there are lots of personal barriers that men experience in terms of feeling ashamed, feeling embarrassed, feeling like they don't want to tell anybody about it, not possibly identifying themselves as what you might call a victim of domestic violence. And a lot of those issues are very similar for men and for women. In terms of further barriers that I think are fairly specific to men, whilst we talk a lot about, and I can completely understand men and women both not wanting to come forward because they feel ashamed of it, you know, they shouldn't do, obviously, but a lot of men, I think, worry that they won't be believed. And that there is a lot of how we see what domestic violence kind of looks like in a stereotypical sense. I think that a lot of men worry that they won't be believed. Some of the men had tried to get help and had been either laughed at or told that they were a man, so they must be the perpetrator, or they were told that they must have done something to deserve it. So I think there's lots of layers of barriers that exist for men in terms of being able to actually get help and support for this.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to also let everybody know that Allison has joined the call. Liz, this is Allison Tiemann. She is the... I guess you could say the founder of Honey Badger Radio, or at least the boss. So she may also have some things she wants to add. Allison, this is Liz.
Hi, I just wanted to thank you for taking on an issue that a lot of people, there's a lot of stigma around, and being a champion for male victims of domestic violence by women. And I have actually looked at your research and read some of it, and I really appreciate the fact that you are challenging this kind of mainstream, I guess you could call it mainstream, attitude towards domestic violence. Then it's basically male against female. And it's a form of patriarchal control rather than being a cycle of abuse. So I just wanted to express my appreciation for that. And I came in a little bit late, so I don't know what questions you've already answered. But I did want to ask, how did you come to study male side of domestic violence victims, specifically men as victims of female aggressors?
Well, I did explain a little bit about that before, but I'll say I'm happy to say it again. I'd explored some in my earlier sort of work during my degree. Somebody did introduce me to this idea that actually women could be violent towards men, and having realised it was not something that I'd ever considered at that point before then. Because when we talk about domestic violence in society, we always talk about it, or we always kind of presume that it is a man being abusive to a woman. And then as I sort of explored that in more detail, I wanted to fight for the victims that weren't being heard and that weren't getting the same help and support, because we just don't talk about it the same. So it's come from that, really. I've been doing it about 10 or 11 years now.
All right. The other question I had was, what are your criticisms of the predominant model? I know that you wrote a paper called Testing Predictions from the Male Control Theory of Men's Domestic Violence, and it essentially found that the control theory, which I guess we could term the feminist theory of domestic violence, it found that it had no predictive validity in terms of explaining the data that you found. Could you tell us a bit more about your criticisms of that, of the predominant model?
Absolutely. The Duluth or the feminist model or the gendered model of domestic violence, it goes under a sort of a lot of names, but it's really the very dominant narrative that still exists at the moment in terms of how we talk about domestic violence. I have issues with it on several levels, really. I think that this idea that actually men are abusive to women as a function of a patriarchal society, and they're establishing their male privilege, and have it being all kind of wrapped up in this feminist idea, I do think that that's probably an appropriate model for quite a small group of the men that are abusive towards women. But my main criticisms of it are the things that it ignores. So that I think domestic violence, when men perpetrate it and when women perpetrate it, is so much more complex than that model allows. I think that the research that we've found that has, you know, looked at the different things that feed into it. So, for example, the personality and the psychopathology that feeds into it, adverse childhood experiences that feed into it. There's loads of different things that can make men and women be abusive in relationships. And I think that that Deleuze kind of feminist model is probably only the case for quite a small group of men who do it. I think that it also ignores a lot of the other research that we know at the moment now about domestic violence. So, for example, the prevalence of female perpetration and male victims. The Deleuze or the feminist model will only see women's violence as being in self-defense or as part of a sort of battered women syndrome, whereas actually women are being abusive in a situation and for reasons that are so much more complex than that. It ignores bi-directional abuse, so that actually roughly half of the relationships where domestic violence exists, it's mutual. So men and women are being abusive to each other in that relationship, including obviously in the LGBTQ plus communities as well. So there's relationships are violent. It isn't just men that are violent. And I think that there's just all these different issues that are wrapped up within a model that it just can't explain. And so that, yeah, the paper that you're referring to was where I took some data and I tested actually the different predictions from it. And I didn't find any support for it at all. And as I say, I do think it's probably the case for quite a small group of men who do use their own patriarchal attitudes, their own male privilege, their very traditional gender role attitudes, perhaps. But I think that for a lot of men's and women's violence outside of that, it's a lot more complex than that model allows.
Would you say that, I mean, saying that there are some abusive men who use, you would, might term attitudes or cultural beliefs about male control and power, as you called patriarchal, would that equally be true for the unilateral female abusers using beliefs about women being responsible or being in charge in the home and other stuff like that to justify their abuse?
My research hasn't looked at that. I'm not aware of any research that's explored that specifically. There are lots of other things that are known to predict women's violence, such as, for example, controlling behaviour and that kind of need to be in control and to manipulate and to maintain that sort of dominance in the relationship. Things like that have definitely been shown to be predictive, but I'm not 100% sure around things like those sort of attitudes around a woman being in charge, that almost matriarchal, I suppose you might say. But I couldn't answer that, I'm afraid. I don't know the answer to that.
So there's no research into that kind of, because if you sometimes you can go and you can find things like if mom isn't happy, no, ain't nobody happy. Kind of that kind of the attitude that the mother is sort of the central figure and the dominant figure in the home, morally and emotionally. And I'm just wondering, since there isn't any research into that, it would be interesting to do that kind of research and then compare it to the reverse, where controlling men use narratives or find narratives in culture where, you know, the man leads the house. Although, I mean, even in the Christian culture, even in the fundamentalist Christian churches, men are supposed to maybe the head of the house, but they are supposed to sacrifice to make sure that their wives are protected and provided for and not harmed. So, I mean, it's almost like this one-sided, they pick out one little piece of what they're being told and they focus on that to justify their behavior. It's almost like if a man is in that kind of what you would term patriarchal control mindset, it's more like he's justifying something that isn't actually justified by what he's being told by these systems of belief, but he's just cherry picking to justify abusive behavior.
That could be true. And it could be the case that even when a man or a woman looks like it fits into this idea that we've just described, it could be that it's just, the thing is, your beliefs about aggression or your beliefs about gender roles, it's only one part of what drives your behavior. There are a lot of other aspects. And I don't think that there's just a one answer, I think, to what predicts violence, because I know I keep saying it, but it is just so much more complex than that. And the family system that it exists in and the relationship that it exists in, that could be one part that could be predictive of it, but it would be part of something a bit more complex than that as well, I would say.
Okay, well, essentially what I was getting at is maybe that the abuse comes before the excuse. In other words, they engage in abusive behavior and then they make excuses about it using these kind of theories and or these kind of things that they've been told, is what I'm
That could be true as well. I mean, a lot of, again, it's not something I've looked at personally, but it could be the case because sometimes we act in the heat of the moment or it's a loss of self-control, and then there is a retrospective attempt to try and explain it through whatever actions or reasons that we find. But that could be true. But as I say, it's not something that I've looked at personally.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll move on to another question then. So have you experienced any kind of resistance or backlash to your work?
Yes, I have, yeah. It's quite controversial still in different areas, I suppose. Some people are very open to it, and a lot of people that have never kind of come across it before will listen and be open and think, well, I just never considered it, I suppose, a bit like I was, when I first started sort of researching it. But yeah, there's some resistance to it. In one of the papers that I did, I tried to explore sort of what domestic violence perpetrator programs looked like within the UK. And it was part of a wider world review that was being done. So I was just kind of covering the UK aspect of it. And in attempting to get organizations to tell me about the programs and things and the curriculums of the programs that they offered, they didn't want to take part in it because it was my research and I was known to work with men and that sort of thing. So there is quite a lot of resistance still to this idea of working with male victims and supporting male victims, as well as, I suppose, challenging this dominant narrative that there is around gender.
All right. Have you experienced any sort of personal impact from this resistance at all?
I wouldn't say personally, no, not too much. I mean, there's a lack of support in some areas for it. I've been asked tough questions when I've presented and done talks on it. But they're always what I do and what I, it's not what I believe in. It's what the evidence shows. It's what my evidence shows. And it's something I feel very passionate about. So I'm never really intimidated by being asked challenging questions about it, because I know that what I'm doing is grounded in good scientific research. And so I can defend all of the work that I've done and indeed the work within the wider sort of area of other researchers that look at this sort of aspect. There are lots of people that are doing research that is in contradiction to this gendered model. And I suppose it's just not talked about as much still in society. So I think it's something that we need to talk about more.
All right. Thank you. That's pretty much all the questions I had. So I'm going to...
Okay.
All right, hand it off to Brian.
Thanks, Allison.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for asking those. Those are really great questions. I also propose to the chat, to the people watching, if they have any questions themselves, then they can just bring them up, and we'll take the ones that are the most relevant, and we'll pass them on. So, all right. So I did get a question from one of our viewers. They said. And I wanted to ask you about this too, because I know that you probably researched this as well. Why do single mothers resort to violence or escalation in the form of yelling whenever a boy child messes up? Or more specifically, can you talk a bit about, I don't know if you've looked at it, but when you say, male victims of domestic violence, do you also look at violence against male children or maybe just children in general?
No, I just focus on the violence and abuse that exists between intimate partners. So I don't work with children. I know that there's overlap between sort of domestic violence and other types of abuse that can occur in the home. One thing that I have looked at within the data that I got was the way that children can be used as a tool for manipulation, though. Like women use as research suggests that men can do this, but I think that women do this more, and it's something where there is, somebody asked me about the barriers before that exist to men reporting, and one of the things is the threats that occur before, when the abuse is taking place, especially if there are children in the house. Mm-hmm. So for example, women often threaten that they will take the children away, or that they will not let them see the child again, or that they will make false allegations of domestic violence or abuse to the children, would then again prevent the man from seeing his children. And I think that that's one of the things that can keep men within an abusive relationship, especially because the system that exists outside of that is still quite geared towards helping women more than men.
Yeah.
So I think that there are a lot of men that fear they wouldn't actually get the help and support you know, if they ask for help, which unfortunately has been proven right in several cases, I think.
And how often do you also look at emotional abuse as well as the physical abuse? And if so, how often does the emotional abuse transcend into physical abuse?
I mean, I couldn't put a number on it exactly, but I think that quite a lot of the time, within the I had 161 men who completed the survey that I did last year, and the controlling behaviour was there for nearly all of them. So the sort of emotional, psychological control and things, that's all kind of, it's an overlap with the words that we use, but it all pretty much means the same sort of behaviour. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge amount of that within the study, but I would say that a lot of that did escalate into physical abuse, although not actually all of the time. The control and the emotional side of it is something that kind of starts, I think, where the manipulation and trying to kind of just seek and establish control over that person is something that starts earlier in the relationship, just through little things, and then it can escalate into quite severe emotional abuse, including the sort of threats then that I mentioned, but also it can you know, escalate into verbal, physical, and sometimes sexual abuse as well.
Did you also look at instances where women, and I think that this is also fairly common, they may not do violence themselves, but they may use, for example, they may use the institutions like the police to do stuff for them. So what have you found with that?
Unfortunately, that is the case for, again, quite a few of the men within my sample. They reported that either through the sort of the threats of it, which I think was a really major part of the control that they used. For a lot of the men had experienced their partner calling the police and reporting domestic violence, even though it had been them that was the victim, and reporting and making false allegations towards, false allegations of them, of abuse by the man to the child, which then meant that the children weren't allowed to see the father. So there were some men in the sample that I'd got who hadn't seen the children for years because of this ongoing battle of abuse, of sort of post-separation abuse, I call it. So it's abuse, even though relationship's broken down, there's a continuous manipulation of the system. Within the literature, other researchers call it legal and administrative aggression. So it's a type of aggression whereby a woman, I mean, it is applicable to women and men, but I think it's something that women do more, where they manipulate and use a system that they know is going to support them to then further manipulate and victimize men in that sense. So yeah, I did see that quite a lot.
Yeah, I see. And are there any psychological effect, like negative psychological effects of, you know, affecting men that have been experienced this stuff, especially if they don't think they can get any support, or if they try to get support, the Duluth model is what is used on them, which often tells them that the reason why this is happening is because of them. You see what I'm saying? Are there any psychological effects for that, and what might those be if there are?
Yeah, so there were some men within the sample that had tried to call and ask for help and had been accused of being a perpetrator, and like a perpetrator in disguise or something. And that had a massive impact on the men, who then just basically said that they would never tell anybody else ever again, because they've kind of put themselves out there to ask for the help and support. And then when it's denied or they're accused in that way, they just then think, well, I'm not going to tell anybody ever again. So that was quite a massive part of that. I mean, in general, the men within the sample talking about this abuse that they'd experienced, it was having really significant effects on them. There was report, they'd sort of use words like anxiety and depression within their PTSD. Some men aren't in a relationship anymore and won't be in a relationship again for a long time because of the fear and the lack of trust that they worry about. More than one man said they'd had thoughts about taking their own life. One man had tried to take his own life and not succeeded. And I remember reading that one in particular where he basically said that he tried to do it and he woke up and he was lying next to her, and it was the worst moment of his life because he was still living in this hell that he couldn't get out of.
Yeah. Are there, do you see in your research any higher or instances of a suicide or self-harm as a result of this?
It's not something that I've looked at specifically at this point in my research because I'm still kind of trying to explore the experiences and look at the barriers to help seeking. I know sort of anecdotally that it is the case that some men are experiencing really severe mental health problems that have come from being in an abusive relationship, which overlaps a lot with the sort of stuff that we see in the literature on women's experiences. So we talk a lot about the sort of the hideous mental health outcomes and physical health outcomes often too. And they're very similar for men and for women. And I think that that feeds into then, obviously, within the UK, there are 84 men a week commit suicide. And I can't, you know, the mental health crisis that we have with men and men's mental health in particular, and the statistics like that, they kind of paint a picture that there are a lot of men that aren't getting the help and support that they need. And that it very well could be related to something like domestic violence and abusive experiences. It could be a whole range of factors, of course, but you know, it's something to consider looking into more.
Yeah. Are there also, has any of your work that given you any insight as to any other patterns when it comes to domestic violence, such as if it's more likely to happen in, you know, people who live in poverty or in lower income areas, or it doesn't really matter? It's just transcends all of that stuff.
It's across all genders, all social classes, all ethnicities, all social groups. It's such a pervasive social issue that it isn't the case that any groups experience it more than others. I think that it's, as I said to Alison before, it's such a complex issue that there's so many different things that feed into it.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. One other thing, have you had in your work, I know that you've gotten resistance and you've gotten people who've critiqued you or they don't believe what you do and all that. Have you also had people come to you and you know, express gratitude or reach out to you to tell you about their experiences and how grateful they are that you're looking into this stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so, I don't know what the word, like, I don't want to say encouraging, but it keeps me going sometimes because it isn't always easy to do it when there is so much resistance. But every time, you know, sometimes, you know, the university reports on the work that I've done, or there might be a news article on it. And every time somebody will get in touch and say how grateful they are to know that somebody out there is doing research on this. And it's just that it's just not talked about enough because there are quite a few people doing research trying to raise awareness of this. But kind of at a societal level, we just don't talk about men's victimization enough, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what other studies have you done besides the one that you are talking about that we've been referencing recently?
That was the big one that I did last year. My PhD data that I mentioned before was where I was, that was my testing predictions from the male control theory. So that was very much about looking at predictors of men's and women's partner violence. I've done a couple of studies like that, just exploring different predictors of it. And again, I suppose in summary, there are lots of different things that contribute towards this. My review of domestic violence perpetrator programs that was published last year as well, that was something that, that's where I really sort of experienced a lot of the resistance to it, but it was really important in highlighting how dominant the narrative is still around this gendered model, and actually the evidence and stuff that I pulled together for that just demonstrates it's not really very effective, and yet it's still obviously very popular. And I know that in the US it's mandated in different counties and states and things like that. So it's still a really incredibly powerful model, but it's not one that's got the evidence behind it to support it being so powerful. So that was another one that I did.
Okay.
As well.
All right. And do you have any future studies that you plan on doing, or, you know, any other things? So you have something in mind?
Yeah, the one that, as I mentioned earlier, that I'm working on at the moment is trying to explore in more detail the barriers that men experience to reporting, asking for help, telling people about it. As I say, what I'd found last year was that there seemed to be some quite complex barriers that exist on different levels. So I'm trying to explore a little bit more about that at the moment. And I've kind of advertised that through my Twitter account as well. And I also want to focus a little bit on kind of this after part, because the findings that I got around the abuse continuing post-separation through the children and manipulation in that sense, I kind of want to explore that in more detail as well, because, again, I think that a lot of how we talk about domestic violence is often about trying to support the victim and the perpetrator when they've separated, but actually, it's not always the case that they separate quite so cleanly in that sense. There's often such a lot of ongoing issues that can then really impact on both parents and the children. So I think that needs a bit more exploration as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's great. Have you been able to get on to, say, any news shows or talk shows or any large podcasts? Have you been able to get a platform to talk about these things, or?
No, but I don't necessarily think that that's as a resistance to my research. I think it's just perhaps not very well known in that sense for anybody to think. So I'm always happy to talk about it because I think it's such an important issue to talk about. And there's a lot of times where I've done talks and things and people have said to me after, I just never really considered that men could be victims. So I think if there's even one person listening that might think, oh, I hadn't thought about that, then it kind of is worthwhile doing these sorts of things to try and raise awareness.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I guess I get one question from Caitlin Bianchi. She gave us a $2 donation. Thank you, Caitlin. She says, is there hope for change in the near future?
Yes, I do think that there is. It's quite slow, but there is progress being made because I've been doing this now for just over 10 years and I see a difference. Within the UK anyway, in particular, about how we talk about it, and a little bit more attention within the media and things is being given to male victims. So I do think that there is some progress being made, but obviously it would be better if it was happening more, just to really try and make sure that these men that are very vulnerable and having these sort of horrible experiences could get the same sort of help and support that's available for women as well.
Mm-hmm. Has any of your research shown, like, have you been seeing the trends? Like, are we seeing more instances of domestic violence in general, or is it sort of on the decline, or do you know anything about that?
I'm not really completely sure on a sort of societal level about the trends of it. I know that we seem to see more female perpetrated domestic violence towards men within the UK. And I'm not sure whether it's the case that women are becoming more violent or whether it's just that actually the little bit of awareness raising that we've managed to do means that men are feeling more comfortable coming forward to report it. It's quite hard to kind of understand which one's which, really. But I do think the more we talk about it, the more likely we are to try and sort of tackle it as an issue.
Yes, I was thinking the same. It's hard to say whether it's because women are doing it more or because men are coming forward more. I'm inclined to lean towards the latter, but that is with, take that with a grain of salt, because I just assume that human beings haven't changed that much and it's more likely that men are just talking about it more.
I've got no more questions, and I think this was really great. But I wanted to ask you, do you know who Erin Pitsey is, speaking of domestic violence?
Erin Pitsey, yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, she's the woman, for those of you guys who are watching that don't know, she opened the very first women's shelter in the UK, and she found shortly after she did that the women that were in the shelter, many of them were as violent as the spouses that they were hiding from, specifically towards their children. So I thought, since Erin Pitsey's dealt with a lot of backlash for trying to address that, if you are interested, Liz Bates, doctor, I don't want to be disrespectful. Then you should consider, again, we were talking about this before the call, consider going to the International Conference on Men's Issues, because Erin Pitsey usually goes to these, and I know that she's getting very old now, so I'm not really sure if she's got a lot of time to be going to these events, but she would love to meet somebody like you, because you're doing the work that she's always wanted to see done. And I would like to say, on behalf of her and the rest of us here at HBR, that we're really grateful that somebody like you is looking into these issues. And there are a lot of men that need this help. And it's not even that people who currently talk about domestic violence don't have the best intentions. But I think that we need to open up the conversation and let men in
so that we can really address the issues and see them for what they are, which are not some part of a patriarchal structure, but rather I think it's just damaged people with other damaged people that don't know how to engage in healthy relationships. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And what I know about Erin Pizzi's work, I've read a few of her books, actually. It's just this idea that actually we're not, it isn't the case that it's always a perpetrator and a victim. And I think that some of the language we use when we talk about domestic violence, especially within sort of the police services and things, is we like to say this is the perpetrator, this is the victim, but it's just not always as straightforward as that, because sometimes there are quite violent relationships where he might do more than she might do more, or then it might be both together. And as I say, it's across different, you know, combinations of genders in relationships as well. It's just that sometimes there are not healthy conflict resolution strategies, like you say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I got nothing else to ask. We've gone for about 40 minutes. I think this is great. And Kill Fang, the King of Reason, asks, Brian, how do I get in contact with Dr. Liz? I put contact information in the low bar. I just put her Twitter and her researchgate.net page. That's basically got what would you find on the ResearchGate again? Is that basically where your work is at?
Yeah, so some of the papers, ResearchGate's a network set up so you can people that are members of the public can access research. So there should be some of my papers available on there. But I'd be happy to be contacted via Twitter as well and to share any of my work if anybody wants to get in touch.
All right. And Tervald Fenris Chain, wow, that's a great name, gives us $2 and says, love you, you're all awesome. Thank you. And thanks, guys, for joining us on the Fireside Chat. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. This was a great interview. And I hope that we see more of Dr. Liz Bates and the work that she does. I want to thank you, Dr. Bates, for coming on today. And I want to thank you guys for watching. And I want to thank Allison for popping in with a couple of her own questions. That's it for me. So we will see you guys on the next Fireside Chat.
Like a furry torpedo to the jugular, this is Honey Badger Radio. Radio with Buddy.